The buzzer after hours. Who says nothing good happens after 2 a.m.? Music. Stories. Just dropped releases. The after party. Nothing is taboo. Join us Wednesdays. After hours.
Hey, y'all. I am Shay. This is the Buzzer After Hours Show. Welcome. Episode 17. Guelph Canada artist Derek Black, Clark Bent, is our guest tonight. Derek has worked on keys in sound design and as a songwriter for over 25 years. He is the founder of the global electronic act King Affinity. Derek is renowned as a synth genius, composer, engineer, and producer, specializing in remixes and reworks. Enjoy the show. Hi, Derek. How are you doing today?
Hi, Shay. Doing great. How are you doing?
Good, good. Thank you for coming on the podcast.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, like I'm really happy to have you on the show. You've had quite a diverse background, all within the music industry. Can you tell us a bit about your background? Because we've never had a guest on that is involved in the areas that you are in music. I'm quite interested in remixes and stuff like that.
Yeah, so I mean, maybe really the place to start is how I wound up connecting with you. Does that work for you? Or
oh, cool. Yeah, it does.
Yeah, because you know, it's those 3 degrees of Kevin Bacon. In this case, Kevin Bacon is played by Sasha Two Cats. And so that's all roads. And there's two roads, right? There's basically Iron Age Mystics, who you've had on before. And I did a remix, and it appears that I may be doing another one for them soon. And Sasha's part of that process, right?
You're referring to Thought Police.
Yes.
The remix, did an amazing job.
Thank you. Yeah, I don't know if you heard the original. I think it's useful sometimes for people to hear the original.
Oh, yeah, I did. We did a whole show on Pride Before the Fall.
Oh, great. Yeah. I mean, my direction from Kevin was basically that it was done, you know, over a year ago or something. And he just wanted me to sort of give it a little more modern spin. And it was a pretty straight ahead, you know, pop rock song. So, yeah, I didn't dissect that one like I usually did. But, you know, I'm usually quite respectful of the artist. I like to talk it out before I get my hands on it. And sometimes they want you to go in and do major surgery and reimagine it. And other times, you know, I always want it because I am a writer also. I always want to honor the original version somehow. So, there's that connection. And with Sasha again, you know, I'm involved with another project that I was actually for a brief minute, a member of Conduit, which is, he and Brian have a, I guess, loosely veiled under the heading of industrial, and they've released their first single and are about to release a whole, I believe, 13 songs.
Yeah, they are. Shortly.
But yeah, that's kind of the background on how we got connected. For me, overall background, I mean, I started as a touring musician when I was 17. I even had to, I'm not sure. I think the drinking age was 18 then. And, it's been a while, right? It's been a hot minute. I had to carry around a letter from the LCBO saying that it was okay for me to be playing in the bar. And by the letter of the law, after the set, I was supposed to disappear up to the band room and, you know, read the Bible or do homework or whatever they expected me to do. But yeah, that's, you know, I did, as most Ontario musicians, I did what was called the Moose Run. Where you cut your teeth in near north and not so near northern Ontario. Mm-hmm. And had some fun, didn't make any money, saw some things I shouldn't have at that age, but still here to talk about it. And yeah, after, you know, being sideman in a lot of acts, I decided that, you know, maybe putting all my eggs in the live performance thing was not the way to go. And I went to a music industry arts program in London, who a lot of other people in the industry have gone to.
At Fanshawe,
yeah. And I actually hooked up. Here I am saying trying to learn the business and contracts and engineering and production and all that great stuff. But I actually hooked up there with four other guys. And we were like the brother band to Honeymoon Suite, if you remember those guys.
Of course I do.
Yeah.
Your band was called The Red Letter.
that's right. Yeah. Which it was actually me that came up with that name. Red Letter is kind of a play on Scarlet Letter.
Mm-hmm. And, I was wondering about that. So was a brother band a cover band?
No. It was literally, so Derry Grant, who is the guitar player in Honeymoon Suite, his brother, his twin, I believe he is even, Pat Grant, was one of the guitar players in Red Letter.
Oh, okay. And,
yeah, we opened for them a couple of times. We're good buddies with them. And yeah, that was all formed as Honeymoon Suite was. Honeymoon Suite was formed in Fanshawe, London's music industry arts program also. They were just a year ahead of us.
I didn't know they were from London.
They're not. They're individually, I'm not sure, but I know the two main guys, Derry and Johnny, are kind of from the Niagara Falls Golden Horseshoe.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah. Yeah, but they did go, not all of them. I think Derry and Dave, the drummer, Dave Betts, I think they were the only two out of the band that actually went to the program.
Okay.
Yeah, and they were good guys.
So it was a rock band.
Red Letter was not as heavy as Honeymoon Suite. It was, I would say, based on our singer, and our production was maybe a little more complex. I'd say it was somewhere between like a Brian Adams and a Rick Springfield, believe it or not.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And what instrument did you play?
I played all the keys, but the bass player and I kind of had our hands on the production. And oddly enough, everybody in the band wrote, which kind of became a problem. You start splitting off into different factions within the group. But yeah, we won there. I don't even think they're around anymore, but there was a local radio AM station called CKSL. Mm-hmm. And we won their band competition. And then later on, we won the Q107 Homegrown. And we also won Craven A Cigarettes. Had a live thing, and we were the college act of the year. So we were on a bit of a trajectory, and then as sometimes it does, it blows up in your face. But
yeah,
I still talk to the guys every once in a while.
Okay, so when did you switch to solely producing and doing remixes and? You have a number of projects.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think I went from that. There was in London still, there was a studio called Electronic Media Arts Corporation, or EMAC. And I was, once I left college, I really became pretty adept at a lot of the computer music and synth programming and all that side of things. Mm-hmm. And I was writing and programming commercials and short films and things like that at EMAC. But I think I hooked up with a guy named Tom Gerenzer, And he was one of the, he's very similar to me. He's got that keyboard side and heavy programming knowledge. But if you remember a Toronto band called Concan in the 80s, Harry Houdini, very pop, electronic pop kind of stuff. But yeah, I, right around the time I left Fancha, I hooked up with Tommy. We eventually worked in a studio together for a number of years and worked on a lot of projects. And yeah, kind of stayed in, you know, niche stuff. Like I programmed bands that were going in to do their records at that time that had a keyboard player. A lot of the keyboard players were decent, you know, players, or they look good. Or their dad owned the van or whatever. So I did a lot of that kind of stuff where, you know, bands were pushing out their first album and they needed someone to sit in the cockpit and just do programming and manage textures. And so I wasn't actually doing a lot of the playing. It was more on the technical side, which was fine. Yeah. You know? Gave me exposure to a lot of different styles. So,
yeah. Well, the three tracks we're featuring today are all vastly different styles. So, well, maybe not vastly. They're all different.
Yeah. No, I mean, we're only looking at a small slice of a number of years, but even, you know, just during COVID, with extra time just to keep my sanity, I've had quite a role. I've put out a lot of material, whether it's collaborating, remixing a lot of my own stuff, and maybe it's worth mentioning now, sort of my dual identity, I guess.
Yeah.
yeah. I mean, you know, not to be overly mysterious or anything like that, but I don't even know how it started. I think I came up with my remix moniker as a Facebook profile, because at the time I was working for a big corporation and everyone was warning me, oh, you can't say what you want or have your creative side and things like that on your profile. So I thought, okay, I'll just come up with a moniker or a stage name, as people used to call it. But it's a bit of play on words. So it's Clark Bent. And so that's a riff on Clark Kent, obviously. And, you know, I had a girlfriend one time that called me Superman for whatever reason.
Oh, wow. So
it so happens I wear glasses too, right? So I thought
that's a whole other show.
Yeah, it is. I think we're on a different podcast at that point. But, yeah, so it's kind of a riff on the Clark Kent thing and the glasses, but it's also the way I spell it. I use a three instead of the E, and that's B3, and that's Hammond organ B3. So that's an insider kind of tip of the hat, because people see me as this, you know, almost 80s or industrial or, you know, really tech electronic stuff, but my background is not as a piano player. I can play a piano, but I was raised on I guess a variety of things, and everything from like gospel, R&B, funk, but anything with Hammond organ on it.
Oh, wow. So, that's interesting.
So yeah, remixes I tend to do under the moniker, as I call it, Clark Bent. And then I have sort of a project of one that I go under King Infinity. And it's funny, I came up with that name. A lot of bands out there that are listening have probably tried this. There are on the internet free band name generators.
Really?
And yeah, you just keep hitting enter and it makes goofy combinations, and it wound up with King Infinity. And I just thought, I'd originally intended King Infinity to be very global, and again, another part of my B3 roots. I played a lot of footy, or, you know, soccer as they call it here. I played music and footy with Jamaicans.
Oh, really?
So I was really into, you know, dub, reggae, two-tone, ska, all that stuff.
I would say ska is close to rock as one of my favorites.
Excellent.
In terms of style of music. I absolutely love it.
One of the bands that we're going to be playing tonight is Dub Pistols, right? And it's a rework. So I took a lot of the lead vocal and the backing out and made it almost more of a dance mix. You'll hear a lot of Motown elements in the keyboard parts that I added. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to fuse sort of dub, reggae, and a bit of like funk, soul, gospel, Motown. And I guess you can tell me whether, and the people out there can tell me whether it works. I quite enjoyed it. I haven't heard back from the band. I should be hearing back from them any day now, but I sure had fun doing it.
Yeah. Well, since you brought it up, why don't we listen to it next?
You want to go right into Dub Pistols?
Yeah.
Awesome. Good. It's a nice bouncy song for a nice bouncy day.
Yep. So we're going to hear Dub Pistols, Stand Together.
Unity will get us through it.
To be honest with you, Derek, that's my favorite track that you submitted to me.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, it's probably the ska. I actually fell in love with it. So how did you connect with the Dub Pistols?
To be honest, again, you know, especially in Canada, even, you know, GTA or whatever we want to call us, and the time that I've spent in different parts of the industry, I always use this term 3 degrees of Kevin Bacon, because it's these strange connections that are woven. There was a guy a year behind me in Fanshawe, a really great dub drummer, reggae drummer named Jesse Cook. Now Jesse King, and his dad's Bill King, who's a very well-known jazz. I believe he plays piano, and he's very involved in the Beaches. He might even run, or is part of the board that runs the Beaches Jazz Festival in Toronto. But Jesse goes under the name Dub Maddox, if you ever want to look him up. And he's like me, only way more international and way more focused. But yeah, anyone out there, just look up Dub Maddox, and he does a lot of remixing. He does a lot of his own stuff. He gets guest vocalists from all over the world that are, you know, some of the legends in reggae and dub.
Oh, wow. I love his music.
Yeah, you will for sure. But that's where the connection came in, through Jesse and, Dub Maddox. And oddly enough, Jesse King and the other gentleman that we're going to be playing tonight, a good friend of mine, from Guelph, Andrew McPherson, they were in the same year. And have kind of had parallel careers and stay in touch. And there's a lot of cross-pollinization that goes on between, you know.
That's a good way to say it.
Yeah.
We're actually coming up to the track New Normal Me by Andrew McPherson. I found it really insane. I went on Echodex's website.
Isn't that amazing?
Singers from Africa, South Asia, Turkey, Fiji. It's incredible what he's doing.
Yeah. Now, Andrew was on that. They've been at that a while. I think they were nominated 7 times for Juno Awards.
Yeah.
There's a lot. It's a big band, and not big in terms of, you know, it has a lot of members. And like you said, typically the vocalists are, it's like a rotating cast. And he's on a record company called 6 Degrees, and they are very globally. I think they're 6 Degrees. I want to say they're in the Bay Area somewhere.
Andrew
has a lot of, he has a lot of UK connections, and mutually we both have a lot of, we both appreciate and seek out, Middle Eastern singers. So you'll hear some of that on, and actually, I just ran into him on this, in the ward in Guelph, recently, and had a little, you know, 10-foot distance chat to catch up. And Ecodec had been sort of on the back burner for a number of years, but the Andrew's almost ready to, I think he's probably 65-70% through a new Ecodec album that was done mostly, you know, the way we're doing it now, which is guys have their home studios and we send stems around to the other guys and collaborate that way, right?
That's an incredible project. I was blown away by it. And I'm not surprised that 6 Degrees picked them up, because the other artists that I believe they're also with 6 Degrees just signed this year. But I won't mention their name in case I'm wrong, but I'm almost positive. They put out a lot of very unique and different type of music.
They do.
It's an incredible, incredible label.
Yeah. As of yet, I haven't remixed Ecodec. But while Ecodec was on hiatus, he's put out, I think he just released his fourth CD under the name Peppermoth.
Yeah.
And Peppermoth is, I think that's also distributed by the same label. But it's much more ambient. There's typically no vocal. It's very ambient. And again, the guest members come and go. There's another guy, Gary Diggins, who's a well-known musician. He plays trumpet and flugelhorn on it, and it's just brilliant. But it's I almost put some of that forward for people to listen to. But again, I wanted to rope things in a little bit. But yeah, 6 Degrees also distributes Peppermoth. If your listeners want to go down the rabbit hole and light things more on almost like an ambient jazz with some electronics. It's very interesting also. Yeah.
Yeah. It sounds interesting. I didn't get a chance to listen.
Yeah. I've done two for sure. I think it's two remixes for Peppermoth. So I like to get my hands in a lot of different pies. There's really no style that I can, you know, country when I was younger, until I actually got hired as a sideman playing for Nashville country artist. And I actually, as a younger player, learned how to play simply and how to fit in country. So even there, new country, I mean, what is country now, right? Like there's always killer players in Nashville, but I'm talking, this was very simple, old cry in your beer, almost kind of.
Did you enjoy that?
I didn't think, I thought I was going to have to drink a lot or smoke a lot to be able to make it through. I was just way too young. But we called it the cow jazz tour because the drummer and bass player, again, were like hardcore traditional trio kind of jazz players. And, I'd worked with them on other stuff, and they thought, yeah, let's bring this guy in, see if he can do it.
Oh, let's go. I'm surprised that you were in Nashville with the old country, given what you, the music that I've heard that you presented me with.
I think, you know, when you're young, you got the blinders on.
No, you also got to do what you got to do.
Yeah, I needed the money.
Yeah, I get that. I'm just trying to see Clark Bent in Nashville. It didn't work with me. Honestly, I was trying to go, okay, I've heard, listen to Come Your Crack, and I'm like, I don't see it, but it's
Well, keep in mind, you know, when you're a sideman, especially a keyboard player, a lot of times the traditional setup is that you have the guys that are, you have the front man and the guitar players and the bass player and the drummer, and you're usually in the back with the drummer, right?
Yeah.
So, I was just there to be quiet and play 1-4-5, 12 bar, you know, eight bar turnarounds, real simple 1-4-5 kind of stuff. Floyd Kramer licks on piano, if anyone knows what that is. Mm-hmm. It definitely, I don't own any records in that style, but you know, as a young kid, I just decided, I needed the money. Mm-hmm. I had the cow jazz guys that brought me in, and so I had to prove to them that I could do it.
Yeah.
And the front guy, the writer, main artist, he had a bit, I won't mention his name. He's unfortunately not alive anymore, but, he had a bit of an Elvis James Brown thing going on where, you know, he was definitely the spotlight. So we got paid well, we got treated well, we ate well. That was the other thing country taught me. Over rock and roll.
Really?
They eat a lot better.
They eat. That's funny, actually. That is funny.
Yeah. So again, it's, you know, I try. I'm never perfect. Everybody's ego gets in the way, but I try to be really open. I remember when Madonna hit, I thought, this is not my thing. But I knew the keyboard player and her music director live, Pat Leonard. And I just used to listen to Pat's playing and his arrangement and production and his sounds and go, this guy at that time, he was the guy in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
he really made. So, yeah, I mean, back then and even more today, I listen to a lot of different styles. I may not like all of it, but I can usually pick out something most people would say would be horrible and find something in there, like the writing or the production or the engineering or whatever.
Yeah. I favor all types.
Yeah, no, it's great. I think everybody benefits from being a little more open-minded, but I also, you know, I had a 4-year, my brother's 4 years older, and my first exposure to a lot of records was, you know, he wanted to be a bass player, but just didn't have it. But back in that time, you know, it was very prog, Rush and Yes and Genesis and all that kind of stuff. And
you realize you said that about your brother on the public airways.
What's that?
He didn't have it. I thought it was funny.
Oh, I think he would admit it. I mean, I'm a big believer. You know, I think he can teach. I could teach almost anyone to sing well enough to put a smile on their face and fool other people into. But there's an element, I mean, you know, and your listeners know, there are some people. There's a young guy out there right now. I don't know if you've ever bumped into him. He's all over the interwebs. His name's Jake Collier.
Yes, I have.
And yeah, I mean, let's face it, that kid is, you know, when people talk about Prince or Stevie Wonder or Bowie, or I mean, that's on a whole different level. I mean, that kid has the genes, right? Like, he's ridiculously natural. And I don't sound great about it. I encourage it. So yeah, my brother would be the first guy to tell anybody that, you know.
Cheesy.
Yeah. The University of Guelph did, and I'm sorry because I'm 2 or 3 layers away from the source, but Andrew was contacted, as were a number of other amazing artists, singers in Guelph here. Mm-hmm. And I don't know the granular details of it, but it was some sort of, you know, feel good during COVID.
Yeah.
Through the University of Guelph music program, like, let's highlight, let's feature local artists and make the kids in the music program and anyone who listens to it feel good about the quality of artists locally.
Yeah.
And so the new normal me, you know, I don't think Andrew wrote super, super literal, but it is definitely a song about living during COVID.
It's a great song. It's a great song.
I love the chord changes. When I first heard it, I heard a bit of the way I did the remix. I'm a big fan. I actually had the joy of working a couple of shows with Crowded House.
Oh, man.
And to me, his chord changes were very Beatlesque, Crowded House. And you'll hear the keyboard choices that I use, you know, old stuff like Rhodes and Hammonds. And there's some modern in there. But to me, it's a tip of the hat to Beatles and Crowded House in my mind, and they're big favorites of mine. So
I wasn't surprised that the University of Guelph was supporting that. They've always been very strong in supporting the arts.
Yeah, I mean, not just supporting it, they took the initiative and contacted the artists, and most of the artists, because let's face it, artists that don't, you know, it's not their side hustle, it's their main squeeze. They're all sitting on their hands. I mean, I've done some collaboration stuff and gotten people to contribute for free, just for the greater good, just for their own mental health, just to make other people feel good during these crazy times. So absolutely, yeah, not only supporting, but I give them huge kudos that they were the initiators. They went out, contacted these artists and said, hey, here's the project, here's the aim of it, here's the mission statement, would you like, can you? And it was a pretty quick turnaround, you know, like the artists had to create new material and record it and master it and get it over to them fairly quickly. So Yeah, absolutely. Big ups to the UG.
It's my alma mater.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. that makes sense.
Yeah, I had a degree in English and courses in studio art. Yeah. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. So it has my heart. Awesome. It has my heart.
Days whose names have wandered off. The clock I never reset. A face whose name I hope to know. That I might just as well forget. Is this the new normal me? For as far as I can see, testament to a dying way. A faithful flick of God's wrist, gathering smells and sounds and feels. Savoring each last people kiss, each moment. The new normal me. Far as I can see, my brow could plant a field of fear. A story in every fold. Rub the letters off the panic switch.
So we're going to talk about another producer-writer that you have worked with from Philly, Hazy Eyes.
He goes under the name Hazy Eyes, yeah.
Yeah, we're gonna, can you tell me a bit about him?
Yeah, so this is the one that I know least about because this was actually something that I did for a remix contest and I didn't win. But I liked what I did and I liked his thing so much that I wanted to give him a little bit of spotlight on the show here. He's a younger guy. He's truly what's called a veteran producer and has been working that way a long time. I mean, technically I am. I learned on big analog consoles and, big 2-inch 24 tape machines. But, I guess technically I am. I can walk into a fully commercial recording studio and operate and love that. But, certainly right now, people that weren't doing it, a lot of singers that relied on studios went out and, got some equipment so that they could, collaborate online.
Yeah. But, a lot of people are.
Yeah. I have the links, obviously. I just think that I've seen his gear list and what he has in his bedroom studio. And he's one of those guys that, we were talking about Jake Collier. I think this guy's, he's a lot more popular regionally, around Philly and in the US. There's probably not a lot of Canadian listeners that would have ever heard of this guy. But he did bring in a guy, again, talking about monikers or stage names. Mm-hmm. Hazy Eyes is one, obviously. And the singer on this track goes under the name Panama. And I have no clue what his real name is. But I liked his vocal approach. And I just took it and went really airy, breathy, dreamy with it. And, I think it's a cool track. It's got some nice layers and dynamics, and, it was pretty well fleshed out when I got it, but I added a stronger beat to it and a little more dreaminess in the production and definitely in the vocal production. But, I know he's still continuing to work on stuff and learn his craft. So hopefully he's a guy that just keeps on learning and growing and becomes more, you could have, and maybe you have in the past, we could go down the rabbit hole and talk about what it's like to be an artist today. And, when we're talking about Hazy Eyes there, even myself, I have a room full of stuff here. It's nothing crazy. I don't spend for the sake of spending. And I think you can't blame your tools. Even Tommy and I, the guy that worked on Concan that you actually played the Recode track, a few nights ago, I think on your late night show. Mm-hmm. And that was all just Tommy and myself on a different project.
Yes, I did. I did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, for the stuff that Tommy and I do, that's about the most straightforward. When I work with Tom, that's about as experimental as I get in any of the projects that we work on. But, I think, Tom and I were chatting that, some of the tools that we used in the studio 15, 20 years ago, you almost had to have a second mortgage on your house, right? And I think it's great that anyone that can strum a guitar or bang out four chords on a piano or sing in the shower and as a way to flex a creative muscle, record a little ditty at home. I think it's amazing, but the flip side of that is that everybody's got the gear. It doesn't cost much. You still need the talent. But with social media, it's awesome because you kind of, after I just gave props to Six Degrees, now they're going to hate me because I'm going to say you don't really need a record label in some cases. Through Bandcamp and Instagram and Facebook and all the social media stuff. The problem is, how do you cut through all that? Because, being able to afford $350 an hour studio time and pressing albums or doing CDs, not everybody could do that back in the day, right? But now there's so much stuff out there, and it's finding a way through, whether it's through your marketing or just your material, your passion for your craft, all of the above. It's a two-sided sword is my point, right? Is that I'm really happy that people that wouldn't be able to exercise their art and transcribe, even if it's into their iPhone. Mm-hmm. I think it's great. I get stuff all the time. I got something yesterday, a gal sang into her iPhone and the quality was terrible, but I could hear her voice and it was an interesting voice. And I was like, yeah, we have to do something.
Oh, good. So, good.
Yeah.
No, I agree with you. It's wonderful. It's wonderful. But I do firmly believe that an artist at some point in their career or journey or project needs to include other people, like
a 100%.
A producer is a goal to an artist, I believe. That's number one. And social media management promotion is not just sharing a post. It's a science. So, I think the opportunity that presents itself with all the changes, like you say, of the cost of equipment, mm-hmm. and setting up your studio, being able to record on an iPhone. I've actually seen several videos done entirely on a phone that are really good quality.
Well, they're even shooting the videos.
Oh, yeah. So I think it's a great opportunity.
Yeah.
But can we listen to Emotion by Hazy Eyes? Want to tell us a bit more?
Yeah. Do you want to listen to it first and then come back?
Yeah. So Emotion by Hazy Eyes.
Physical emotion.
So tell us a bit of the backstory behind that.
Well, I dabbled a little bit in it. Is that it's probably, and you know, this is again in our theme that we just left off of you know, we're in COVID pandemic time, but we're also in technology time and time pressure from, you know, whether it's work or family or this or that. You know, I'm quite comfortable with work. I've never met this artist. And it's funny, there's another local one that I was considering putting up, and she's an electronic kind of experimental. Her name's Kitzel, K-I-T-Z-L. And again, it was this cross-pollinization 3 degrees that I bumped into her. Obviously, the arts music community in Guelph is not massive, but I came across her stuff, and she's kind of a one-person band, and she does a little pre-COVID. She did a little bit of I don't know if you're familiar with, there's a lot of artists that are called live loopers. Mm-hmm. Where they play live on stage, but they're using looping electronics. So they'll play, you know, 4 bars on their acoustic guitar and then click on the button and it keeps repeating, and they just keep adding tracks to it.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
The guy we were talking about, I think Jacob Collier started off that way. But there's quite a few of them out there, and she's like that, but kind of on the experimental electronic side of it. But I just liked, I got really attached to her melodies and things like that, that were just sounded like someone that was raised by wolves or lived in a cave, and just she, not in a good way, right? But sometimes you come across somebody that, you know, let's face it, all music is derivative at some point, right? Mm-hmm. It's all for the most part based off of certain scales and riffs, and you know, as I talked about the country with a, you know, blues typical 1-4-5 turnaround kind of thing. But yeah, it kind of excites me when I run into an artist, especially a young artist, that just seems like, yeah, I made the extreme point of, you know, raised by wolves, but it's almost as if they didn't have any of those influences growing up, right? And it just it germinated naturally to be something that's a little different. And honestly, I heard a little bit of Kate Bush in her. I think Hazy Eyes is not as extreme as Kitzel. Mm-hmm. And I'm just waiting for some stems from her to do another remix. But she's the only flip side of dealing with that type of artist is, you know, when they're very, I'm sure you've met a lot of people that are very, what we would call free spirits. And it's refreshing because they're not tied. They're not tied by convention. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? And
it is
when I hear that musically. Yeah. The only flip side of it is that, you know, they're kind of helium balloons that aren't attached to the earth, and you love them for that. But when it's time to get things done, or there's, you know, there's a deadline or things like that, sometimes it's like herding cats a little bit, you know. So everything's, I'm a closet Taoist, so everything's yin and yang to me, and I find great humor in duality, right?
Yeah.
So. Someone like Hazy Eyes and Kitzel, and I look for these people. I've got my ears open, and I just love their seeming lack of derivation to stuff that's been done already. I really like working with that type of project, whether it's all the way at the end or not.
I can see why. It was just great music.
Yeah.
Great music. When you approach a project, we were talking mm-hmm. in the green room about sometimes you do a rework and sometimes just a remix. Can you right, explain perfect. That to the listeners?
Perfect segue. I was just thinking if we should jump into that now. I don't know if this is, I don't know if I'm using industry correct terminology. Because a lot of people, this is the other thing about working in your bedroom studio is that, you know, I almost wanted to get a t-shirt. It's a running joke with Brian from Conduit. You know, guys that spend endless hours finessing, you know, 2 or 3 dB of an EQ move. We kind of invented isolation before isolation even existed, right? So I don't know if other people use this idea, but when I'm working with an artist, as we were talking in the green room, sometimes they just, you know, they pull the reins off. They want you to go on a complete tangent different from the original. Mm-hmm. I always start, because I'm a writer also, with the respect that I want to honor the original version, but I want to do my take or improve on something that resonated with me that maybe wasn't discovered in the original project. So, you know, some of the higher level paying projects are very specific, especially when you're dealing with management or other layers, where they will almost give you guidelines like, hey, you know, the singer is the star of the show here, so don't mess with the lead vocal that much. But I'm lucky to work with a lot of people that don't give any rules. And when I have people remixing me, I do the same. It's like, I picked you for a reason. Go crazy as a starting point. Like, you know, all breaks off. So to me, that's where the delineation between a remix. So a remix is not major surgery.
Okay.
Most of the original elements or how we get delivered in the studio are what are stems, which is all the individual tracks from the session that was recorded wherever. It could be in England or Russia or Taiwan or Toronto. Mm-hmm. So for me, a remix is something that it may involve, like, there are other times where it's like, okay, this is a single for terrestrial radio. So we need this version to get to the chorus, because that's the hook, that's the money shot. Okay. We need to get there in 1 minute and 20 seconds. And that can still be a remix. You can still change the arrangement. But when I get to what I call a rework, that's where I sift through the individual stems. And then out of 20 stems, maybe I only use parts of the lead vocal and one guitar riff that I think is kind of fundamental. And I wind up, you know, a lot of times it's redoing percussion drum tracks, recutting bass tracks. You know, there was a real bass on the original. Well, for example, Thought Police, right? It was a very traditional type of rock band format. And I completely redid the drums, the bass elements. There's some traditional, really played electric bass.
Yeah.
And then I added elements of sequenced bass and, you know, Moog bass type stuff. And so when I'm changing the overall feel substantially, I'm recutting more than 50% new tracks. Yeah. That's what I would call a rework.
Okay.
And if it's severe enough and the artist really digs it, a lot of time they'll call me up and they'll say, hey, you know, you did enough on this, that I actually want to give you a writing credit.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have the ego that I push for that. This is all typically discussed in advance, you know, the rules and regs of engagement. Yeah. And I love doing either. If it's just doing a better mix. So I don't change any of the tracks. They're just not happy with the overall mix. I can do that. I can do something in the middle, or I can do, like I just described, kind of a radical rework.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how it works in my world. I don't know if that's an industry standard. It just, it It makes sense to me. I see remix used as, you know, it's almost like saying sushi. There's probably 3,000 different types of sushi, but it's all called sushi, right?
Yeah, definitely. You're very talented at what you do.
Oh, thanks.
And I've liked everything you put before me, so.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, I was a bit unsure. I mean, there's obviously a lot of stuff in the King Infinity catalog, which is a little more ambient, cinematic, electronic. And on my Bandcamp page, I've kind of arranged all those in what is typically thought of as CDs, like CD collections. But in the electronic world, I dealt with them more like silos. And so you're likely to find the same style. Like I have all the global stuff. I have a whole series called Fragments, which I set my own rules in composing and recording where I only had limited, I forced myself to only use a very few tracks and nothing. I had to write it on the spot, record it, mix it, master it, and put it out in less than 24 hours. And wow. it comes off a little bit, for all the Nine Inch Nails fans out there. Trent has an ongoing series called Ghosts.
Really?
And it's kind of the same idea. It's kind of, you know, stream of consciousness, sketch patty stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good exercise. I encourage any writer or producer to get into that mode because we tend to overthink. We tend to overmix. There's a very popular saying that a great mix is never done. It's only abandoned.
Mm-hmm. That's a good saying.
And it's true. You know, like you could find me 4 years from now. I'm a skeleton with cobwebs and I'm still working on the same remix, you know? And there's times where that's valid, right? But yeah. I really like, I had another little stint in my career where, again, I was young and needed the money and the exposure. And I would go into this gentleman's studio with a small setup and I was writing, you know, theme music and filler wallpaper music for National Film Board, you know, like, the stuff you would see on the projector in grade school, you know, the brown squirrel is a small furry animal found in the greater wetlands of Nova Scotia, you know, all that exciting kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But the cool part of it, it's kind of where Fragments came from is that, you know, it's a limited budget. And there was just the two of us, and he was like the video producer, and he would coach me on the music. But I had to write and record the music on the spot.
Wow!
And we would bang out like, you know, 20 minutes, 30 minutes worth of NFB wallpaper in 5 or 6 hours.
Wow, that's incredible.
That's kind of where Fragments came from. And for any writers out there or aspiring writers, that's my biggest bit of advice to sharpening your pencil, honing your craft, all the good terminology that we use. But yeah, set yourself limits. Sometimes out of boredom, Brian and I will call each other up and we'll say, okay, here's the challenge of the day. You're going to write something really angry. It's going to be 148 BPM. Here's the only plugin synth that you're going to be out. You know, you can only use FM8 and this drum machine.
Oh.
And I want to hear what you got by the end of the day.
That sounds very fun, actually.
It's a lot of fun, but while you're having fun, you're actually really tuning in your writing chops, right?
Yeah, 100%. An artist wants to connect with you or somebody wants to buy your music, where would we go?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have all the links and I don't have the exact ones in front of me, but the bulk of what I do under the Clark, Bent, and King Infinity is up on Bandcamp.
Okay, so we looked at Bandcamp.
Yeah, if you just you know, go to bandcamp.com and punch in under artist, you know, under the search engine, just put Clark Bent in there. You'll find most of the current remixes under One Silo, and then you'll find some King Infinity tracks. And again, you know, there's fragments, there's cinematic, there's what a lot of people are calling now neo or new classical. There's definitely some global stuff. I also have a YouTube channel under Clark Bent, and I did the videos that are up there. There's three or four of them. And I also, did all the editing and conceptualizing on the, and most of that is, you know, kind of the beat heavy global influenced, you know, world electronic kind of stuff. Those would be probably, yeah, the quickest ways. And you know, you can, on Bandcamp, you can sign up for newsletters. So every time I spit out another idea, you'll get a notification. And there's a way to contact me on there.
Yeah, definitely. Bandcamp's a great platform. Before we go, I wanted to tell you the GI title theme by King Infinity. I absolutely love it.
Yeah, so that came about, again, it's all about connections, and a lot of times stuff comes at you from left field, from connections you never think. The show producer on that, so that was a May, well, it was a documentary done a number of years ago. And it was a friend of mine, and she, even though she didn't really, documentaries don't typically have the budget for custom music, but because she was a friend and because the subject material, so it's called Jihad Struggling with Islam. You can find it online. I think TVO picked it up once upon a time. I think it was partially funded by some Canadian arts organizations.
It won a Gemini nomination as well.
Yeah, I didn't win. Well,
it was nominated.
Well, yeah, the overall project actually won some document. I know they won one in the UK, but my contribution, which was the original soundtrack, it did get nominated the year that it was put out. I didn't win. A very, very good friend of mine won it, so I was very happy.
I wanted to mention it because I played it. It was haunting. You really captured the energy of the hunted, and like I was transported. It did amazing.
A lot of people that do any sort of music for picture, sometimes they use what are called temp tracks initially before it gets to the composer. And sometimes it's a good thing, and sometimes it's a very bad thing. And in this case, they wanted you know, Peter Gabriel world haunting type of stuff. And I think that's kind of what I gave him.
Yeah, you were bang on. I love it. I love it. I love different types of music.
Thank you. Yeah. No, I enjoy that. That, Gabriel's one of my biggest influences, especially some of the, you know, Birdie and Last Temptation of Christ. That type of stuff is, that's right up my alley for sure. I enjoy that style a lot. So thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Thank you so much for spending time on the show so we could get to know you better. I look forward to hearing your new work that's coming out because you seem quite busy. So I expect to see many releases and keep me in the loop.
Will do. Yeah, there's a lot of very interesting things that are percolating right now. So, awesome. Yeah, and thank you for spending the time. I know I'm not I don't fit into one category. I'm not really a band per se. I've got a couple of different sides. So, thanks for being open minded and yeah.
You don't have to fit into a box to come to the podcast. Yeah, no, I thought you know, I just have to love your music. That's all, man. Okay. Thank you. So thank you. It's a pleasure getting to know you better and have a good evening.
You too. Thanks for having me on.
Closing tonight, a quote from Bono. Music can change the world because it can change people. Simple yet true. And that brings us to the end. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you to Derek Black for coming on tonight's show. When the show goes silent, take a minute to reflect. The messages told through music tonight are powerful. Remember, without music, our canvas is blank. Night all. Cheers. Well, that's a wrap for tonight. Episodes run every Wednesday. Who shows up or what we talk about? Who knows right now? Live on the edge. Just tune in and enjoy. See you next Wednesday. From my pad to yours, After Hours. Subscribe feeds at thebuzzerpod.com. Cheers.